Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with Phil Goldberg. He's the author of Spiritual Practice for Crazy Times, Powerful Tools to Cultivate Calm, Clarity, and Courage. And I believe that that book certainly does speak for the present. A little bit about Phil. He's been a guest on our program several times. I consider him a friend and somebody that I connect with when I'm in L.A. a few times a year. Phil is the author or co-author of numerous books, a public speaker and workshop leader, a spiritual counselor, meditation teacher, and ordained interfaith minister. As I mentioned, he lives in L.A. He co-hosts Spirit Matters, which is a podcast, and leads American Veda tours to India, and blogs regularly on Elephant Journal and Spirituality and Health. So please welcome to Common Threads, once again, Phil Goldberg. Hello, Phil.
Hi, Fred. Great to be back with you.
Thank you. You know, last week when we were signing off, it occurred to me we did not give people your website. And, you know, I love your Goldberg variations that come out. And perhaps people other people would appreciate that. So if they would like to receive occasional newsletters from you that are packed with inspiration, information, news about the things that you're up to, including tours to India, how would they do that?
My website is my name, philipgoldberg.com, Philip with one L. And everything's there.
Okay, including signing up for the newsletter.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. So to recap, last week we talked about how some people, many of whom have cultivated a spiritual practice. They are interested in transcending the mundane to one level or another, but have become frustrated by everything or a lot of things. The political scene, the pandemic, the racism, all of the riots in the streets, all of these things can certainly bring a body down. But the book that you're talking about, the book that you wrote, is encouraging people to deepen their spiritual practice, to try their very best to let go of the sorrow, let go of the frustration, and let go of the anger. Give us a few ideas of where you might take the reader in terms of developing a practice.
You know, the book is based on the premise that the spiritual is practical. And it's practice-oriented. You know, it's that old joke of, you know, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. And the same is true of the spiritual life. So it's a practice-oriented book, and it centers on the premise that we all have within us what I call a sanctuary of peace and a fortress of strength. That is the core of what we are, the core of our being. And so everything in the book, and there's a multitude of practices, suggestions, tips, and so forth, that it's all designed to bring us into that light, the light of our inner self that's at peace and is the source of all love and compassion and goodness. There are methods that give us easy access to that, and that's what I emphasize. And the core of it to me is to establish a daily practice, a sustained practice, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour, where you bring yourself into that place that is beyond the mind, beyond the turbulence of the emotions, and just to infuse some of that inner peace into your life when you come back out into the world. So I call it the spiritual two-step. You go inward, you establish that it's like soaking a sponge in the nectar of inner peace. You come out, and some of it stays with you. And you do that on a regular basis, and you find that you can, not with any effort, but you just find you're sustaining equanimity and inner stability and presence of mind in your world, no matter how turbulent it gets. You lose it sometimes. I've been meditating regularly for more than 50 years. My wife will tell you I am not always... You know, peaceful, loving guy. I get angry. I get upset. I turn on the news and want to, you know, scream. But I recover more quickly than I did before I had my spiritual practice, and there's a cumulative effect. That, to me, is a core thing. And I give, you know, a lot of explanation and instruction for creating a regular, what yogis call sadhana, daily practice. That's effective, even practices. And then there's a million things that can be done. I advocate having an inventory of practices that you can call upon as needed in your day, whether you have, you know, a minute to just bring yourself back to center, find the crack in the darkness where the light comes in, to quote Leonard Cohen's song. And if you have 10 minutes, if you have a half hour, so to have at your disposal a complete pantry, so, you know, when you need it, you know how to tune in and bring yourself back to stability. And without a repertoire, we start to flounder, and we lose our calm, we lose our cool, we lose our poise, and we start to make mistakes, and we start contributing to the madness instead of healing the madness. Some of it is as simple as a few deep breaths done in a certain way. So I have several breathing practices. I have meditation instructions. I have, you know, for people who are oriented toward prayer, advice about deepening prayer. So there's a lot to list, Fred.
No, obviously. I mean, I read the book, and you are correct. There's a lot there, and I'm sure you're not encouraging everyone to do everything, but it's a nice smorgasbord to be able to choose from. This, you know, what resonates with you. What do I need right now in my life? And maybe I'll need something else that's in the book 2 months from now, and I won't need what I'm practicing at this moment.
One of the premises of the book is we're all on our own individual path. It may be very similar. We may have a similar tradition. We may be have an allegiance to a certain lineage or religious tradition. We may go to the same meditation center, whatever it is, but we all are individual and our needs change, just like our nutritional needs change, or our need for one form of exercise as opposed to a different one changes as our bodies change. Our spiritual needs change too. And it's all linked to our emotional needs, our physical needs, our circumstances. And so I say that we all have a spiritual guide, a spiritual positioning system, you know, like a spiritual GPS. And if we tune into that, we can adjust the practices we use, how much time we devote to them, add this, maybe do less of that at different times. And we're very fortunate now to have this amazing access to a varieties of teachings and practices. I put a lot of them in my book, but of course, you know, you could have written a 1,000-page book, not a 200-page book. So there's many, many things to choose from. And the main thing is to choose with discernment and not just go willy-nilly sampling everything, you know, like you can go to a smorgasbord, and you know, no one loves food buffets more than I do, and so I know from experience that if you just go for the things that taste good, you don't get the proper nutrition and you can get sick. And there's a spiritual equivalent of that too, you know. So you do it with discernment, with by tuning into what you really need and what will serve you at the each moment.
I would say that the book definitely has an interfaith feel to it. You draw on so many of the traditions, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism. When you are drawing from the well of the Abrahamic traditions, you do tend to focus, not entirely, but a good deal, on the more mystical sides of those religions, the Kabbalah, the Sufism, the mystical Christianity. But a tremendous amount of the terminology that you use in the book does come from the more Hindu-Buddhist side of things. Again, not exclusively. And for those people who understand those terms, that's great. And you do a fine job of defining them. My question is this, in terms of those traditions that are available to everyone from Hinduism and Buddhism, when you talk about the benefits of spiritual practice, particularly things like meditation, do you think that some of the spiritual leaders overpromise? That is to say, when you were young, when you were first drawn to the TM movement, were you thinking that, like, in 6 months, you would never have a negative emotion in your life ever again?
Who, me? Oh, yes. And you're absolutely right, but you touched on a lot of things there. You're right that I draw a lot from especially the yoga tradition, because they had this, you know, the yogis have maintained in the Hindus and Buddhists, you know, I'm using yoga in a blanket sense, these practical methodologies, various forms of meditation, various physical practices like we know of in yoga, huge repertoire of breathing practices, devotional practices. So I tend to draw from them, but I do have this orientation that you could call the perennial philosophy that finds that in the mystical traditions of all the world's faith, you find commonalities in methods and outcomes and inner experience. And so based on that, I drew from, you know, I tend to draw from the mystical sides of it. Mystical meaning that area of spiritual life that takes you inward toward union with the divine, however you choose to define that. But yes, in the popularization of the teachings that came from Hinduism and Buddhism that were, you know, presented as appropriate for anybody of any faith, principally meditation, but now also physical yoga practices and mindfulness practices. There have been excessive promise making or an excessive wishful thinking on the side of students, and I was one of them at one point. I tell this story in my book. I talked on in this interview about maintaining equanimity in the midst of turmoil of life. Well, I use that word because it stood out the very first time I ever read the Bhagavad Gita. There's one of the verses says that the yogi develops equanimity in loss and gain, defeat and victory, pain and pleasure. And I said, man, I want that. I really want that. And the truth is, you do gain that with regular spiritual practice of, you know, any deep kind of spiritual practice, you will have more equanimity in the midst of turmoil over time. But I expected that, you know, it will come quickly and it will never go away. And it didn't work out quite that way. And I remember being, you know, a shocked young man when I went through some bad times, you know, after the initial phase of personal transformation from my meditation practice. And I said, wait, what's going on? It's not supposed to be like this. All things are supposed to be good now and happy and joyful. Why is this mess happening in my life, you know? I forget what the circumstances were, you know. But things happen to all of our lives. And that, it was a fantasy to expect otherwise. And to expect that, you know, I'd never get angry again, I'd never be in despair again, I'd never be sad again, I'd never be, you know, upset again. We're human, and, you know, life continues. But our ability to maintain some inner stability and inner peace and even joy in the midst of it, and a warm-heartedness and compassion in the midst of it, and clarity of mind in the midst of it, we can improve on that. And when we lose it, we can recover more quickly if we have an inventory of practices to call on.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella. Phil Goldberg is our guest today, and we're talking about his latest book, Spiritual Practice for Crazy Times: Powerful Tools to Cultivate Calm, Clarity, and Courage. Phil, speaking of spiritual leaders and teachers, I believe the last time you were on Common Threads, we were talking about the book that happened before this. I believe it was the immediate book before this, correct me if I'm wrong, The Life Story of Yogananda. Is that correct? Is that the previous book for
you? Yes, it came out in 2018, and you had me on the show, and we talked about The Life of Yogananda, which is the title of the book, The Life of Yogananda.
Yes, yes. Now, I know that you have a special affection for Yogananda's work, and this year is the centenary of him coming to the United States. I'm just wondering if, with the pandemic, did you have activities lined up that you had to yeah. cancel?
Yeah. Yes, you're right. It is the 100th anniversary. He arrived in Boston, and where he stayed for the first 4 years of his remaining time in America, which was, you know, 32 years. And yes, there were events and, you know, celebrations scheduled that had to be curtailed because of the pandemic. Some, you know, were just sort of truncated and will be online. I've already given a couple of talks online. So, yeah, unfortunately, there won't be big gatherings and festivities of the kind that had been planned. But it's an anniversary very much worth commemorating, because his impact on the spiritual foundations of America were tremendously powerful. And also, you know, to come back to, you know, spiritual practice for crazy times, having, you know, recently written a biography of Yogananda, one of the things that stood out for me in doing my research was that he epitomized what I am writing about in the new book, because, you know, he was a very busy man with a mission, and, you know, he was running a spiritual organization, and, you know, through the Roaring Twenties and the Great Depression and the war, he was under a lot of pressure. Financial pressure to, you know, the organization had to pay their bills, people disappointing him. He encountered racism and religious bigotry, and, you know, the British were spying on him. I mean, he went through a lot, And he was a monk, and yet he maintained this inner spiritual orientation as his priority, but without compromising on his duties and responsibilities. And I found that admirable. And also, he was very well informed about what was going on in the world. He was a renunciate himself, and he's taught that spirituality, spiritual practice should be the highest priority in life. But he never asked people to be indifferent to the world or to escape, except temporarily, into, you know, spiritual practice or the occasional retreat. But he was engaged, you know, and I found that he, you know, he spoke out against British colonialism in his homeland. He spoke out against racism and the unjust immigration laws that kept him from being a citizen in the U.S. until the last few years of his life. He spoke out against all kinds of cruelty and greed. And I found that very admirable coming from a monk. And it was, to me, inspiration for writing confidently about such things for the rest of us in the new book.
You know, I can't keep up with all of the science that is coming out to back up what you are saying. I suspect you probably do a better job than I do.
I have trouble keeping up too, and I'm supposed to because I write about this stuff.
Well,
but you're right, and I'm glad you brought it up. I had several criteria for what I would include in the book. It had to be practical. I had to have a good sense that what I was advocating in the book was really going to be useful for people, and so it had to, the methods, the tips, the guidelines, the instructions, they all had to have some foundation of efficacy. And some of it is just like centuries of use. We know, you know, certain practices have been used by people and benefiting their lives just anecdotally and by tradition, sometimes going back hundreds and hundreds of years. But now, in the last 40 or 50 years especially, scientists have done a lot of work on methods like meditation, breathing practices, mindfulness practices, prayer, spiritual community. Some of these spiritual methods can be measured, or the impact on the individual can be measured. And this is, you know, now there's, you know, thousands of research studies demonstrating the efficacy of especially meditation and mindfulness, but many others as well. So where I could, I have favored methods that had not only a proven track record historically, but had been studied in modern scientific, you know, experiments. And so I drew upon that too. And now you find, psychologists and medical people recommending what were once thought of as religious or spiritual practices, some of which were translated into more secular terms, so there wouldn't be the barrier of being seen as religious. These things work. And so, you know, we have data to prove it now.
I really appreciate, too, the advice you give on your chapter on levitation, wearing a football helmet to avoid hitting your head on the ceiling. I think people really should take note of. Okay. There is no chapter on levitation.
No, it's like, you know, way back in the past, I wrote a book on sleep, and someone told me their method for curing insomnia was they go into the bedroom, they put on their pajamas, shut the light, and run full speed into the wall. And then I had to say, that's not in my book. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. One more time, Phil, if people are interested in learning more about you and getting getting on your mailing list to receive Goldberg Variations, it's Philip with one L, philipgoldberg.com, right?
Correct.
Okay. Wonderful.
Can I mention my podcast?
Absolutely. Talk about it.
My podcast, which I co-host, we've now been on for about 4 years and have a couple of hundred, 230 or 40 interviews with spiritual luminaries and great teachers, wise people, scholars, and so forth. It's called Spirit Matters, and I say it without any monetary motivation, because we don't make a dime. But it's our service, and I would love your listeners to tune in and find inspiration.
Wait a minute. You don't make a dime. You're copying Common Thread's business model. Now stop it.
I was hoping you'd advise us on how to monetize.
No, I'm the last person you want that kind of advice from, believe me. Phil, it's been absolutely wonderful to have you back again, and I'm sure this will not be the last. I look forward to sometime in the not-too-terribly-distant future where we will hang out in Los Angeles together, but have great success with the book in the meantime.
Thank you for having me back, Fred, and stay safe.
Thank you. You're listening to Common Threads on WGVU. Phil Goldberg has been our guest today. His book, Spiritual Practice for Crazy Times, Powerful Tools to Cultivate Calm, Clarity, and Courage. Please join us again next week here on WGVU-FM.